Welcome to the Conservation Is podcast, a Conservation Chat UK production. This is the place where we start the conversation about all things conservation and share them with our listeners. You can join in and interact with us using the hashtag Conservation Is and the hashtag Conservation Chat UK. Let's start the conversation. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Conservation Is podcast. I'm here with Stuart again. My name's Laura, and today we're going to be discussing responsible tourism. So I guess I just wanted to kick off and say I am actually a reformed animal tourism addict. And if I knew then what I knew now, I wouldn't have made many of the choices that I've made in the past. But I thought it was important to be transparent. And, you know, you can change and you can change your mind about things. So I've done it all. When I was a kid, I've been to a few dolphinariums, seen dolphin shows, sea lions doing tricks, jumping through hoops. I actually went to Tiger Kingdom in Thailand years ago. I've ridden an elephant. I've had photographs taken with monkeys and gibbons in the street, and various other kind of animal selfie situations. So yeah, just wanted to kind of kick off by asking you, Stuart, what's your opinion on animal tourism, whether that be dolphinariums, Tiger Kingdom, elephant riding, etc., etc.?
Okay, so I'm not as well travelled as you, so I've not been to half these places you have, but I have actually been to a dolphinarium in the UK, which might sound a bit strange because we've not had them here since the early 90s, 1991, I think. But when I was a kid as well, it was before the era of the cove and blackfish and lots of the scientific information what's come out about captive cetaceans. But I actually went to see killer whales and dolphins in a place called Marineland in Morecambe. And this was actually billed as Europe's first oceanarium. And even at that point, there was campaigns to release the animals. And there was like a group of organisations which come up with a campaign called Into the Blue, and one of the last dolphins got released in 1991, I think. And although these attractions are not illegal in the UK sort of set an example and doesn't keep any captive dolphins. Now, at the time, I absolutely loved it. You know, I was 7 or 8, and it was wonderful to see these fantastic animals, and it was amazing they could jump through hoops and so on. But I can sort of be a bit naive with it and sort of get away with saying, well, it's before the real campaigning started and the real education was out there. I think personally there's so much information out there about the impact on dolphins and killer whales and so on that I would really avoid them if I went abroad. And we're seeing that reflected with a lot of tour operators stopping selling tickets to such attractions.
As I said, knowing what I know now, if I knew that then, I would have stayed away. I wouldn't have touched them with a barge pole. Because basically, cetaceans are so intelligent. They travel such long distances. They're not equipped to be cramped in very, very small swimming pools. They're basically living in a bathtub, you know, compared to what they're used to. And I don't think there's anyone out there who can argue well enough that these dolphins and killer whales and whatever else are kept in these dolphinariums, sometimes belugas are kept, you cannot argue that they are better off in captivity. Sure, there are numerous threats to cetaceans. I actually study cetaceans myself. There are so many threats facing them in the wild, but I cannot see a way of keeping them in captivity that is better. The killer whales are thrown in together. They're taken from the wild. They're thrown in together. They don't know each other. They're not from family groups. They're literally strangers to one another. Killer whales have different dialects around the world depending on where they come from. They have different languages, some might say. So when you throw all of these killer whales into a small space, they can't escape anywhere and they don't know each other. Aggression is bound to occur. So we see rake marks, we see terrible bite marks. We actually see sometimes killer whales beaching themselves onto the side of the swimming pool to escape their fellow captives.
But the argument is sometimes because some of these behaviours you will see in the wild, so sometimes you will see rape marks and so on, but they're certainly not to the extent you see in captivity.
Also, they have the opportunity to get away. They've got the big wide ocean to escape.
Exactly, so it's to a lesser extent, and also they're less likely to get infected and so on. But I think one of the arguments, and we'll move on to some other attractions in a second, but one of the arguments is, okay, they can't provide a perfect environment, but they're educational and they have a conservation value. And personally, I don't see that. I don't think animals doing unnatural behaviours is educational. And although, going back to myself when I was younger, you know, I loved it and I wanted to do something for whales and dolphins, I sort of know that was the wrong way about going about it.
And I feel, obviously, I mean, if you've been to one of these places, you know, you're the same as me. I've been to many of these places before I knew the damage that occurs because of these places. And the more that you look into it, the more you learn. I mean, these dolphins, they aren't, you know, I mean, more recently they were bred in captivity. That has now been banned. Is that a global ban or is that just certain places?
That's mainly with orcas and just certain places at the moment. But again, the concentration after blackfish has been on orcas. And that's a positive thing because they probably have some of the least good well or the most poor welfare in captivity. So it's a very good starting point. But there's lots of campaigns, lots of public information now. So I don't think it's really an argument to have these attractions.
No.
What about your time at Tiger Kingdom?
Oh, yeah. I actually, at the time, obviously, I was in complete awe of these animals, and to be able to be in this, you know, in a cage with a tiger and be able to touch it, and that was a moment lived through rose-tinted glasses. I was just totally blinkered, and all I saw was me touching a tiger. It was a very selfish occurrence. It was because I love animals and I want to touch one, I want to be close to one. Looking back at it now as an animal conservationist and looking at it from a welfare point of view, there's nothing going on there that's, you know, right. There's no good practice. There's no conservation. These tigers, I can't even describe to you how small their cages are. I saw the most giant tiger I've ever seen in my life. And it probably only had a foot around it to move. It was just kept in a box all day until it was its shift to come out of the cage and be touched by tourists. And there were lions and there were baby tigers. And I know, I don't know about Tiger Kingdom specifically, but I doubt if I'm wrong, to be honest. They dope them. They give them sedatives so that they, you know, they won't attack you, basically. Because if you were a tiger and someone was tugging on your tail and touching your paws when you're just trying to chill out, surely you would react.
And what was the story you were given when you went there? Were you given anything about conservation?
No,
welfare?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. It was literally, come and have your photograph taken with a tiger. And there'd be photographs of these people smiling, grinning with baby tigers and massive, you know, fully grown tigers in all sorts of weird and wonderful poses. All over Chiang Mai in Thailand. So I totally understand why people do it, but it's because they don't know. It's because they don't know the damage it does. These tiger, you know, tigers are you know, really threatened in the wild. There's not many left. And we need to be funneling the money that we, for example, pay to go to Tiger Kingdom into wild tiger conservation, because they're not breeding them to send them back into the wild. They're breeding them so that we can go and have selfies taken with them. So it's actually helping absolutely no one. It's just for, there's no necessity there. There's absolutely no good reason why that's happening.
And another attraction what seems to be quite popular, and again, I'll give an example back from the UK, is elephant attractions. Now, it's just before my time, so I think it closed just before I was born, but growing up in Manchester, I sort of am aware about it. There used to be a place called Bellevue Zoo, and it was a really good zoo for the time, but even then, you used to be able to have elephant rides around the zoo. Now, thankfully, that doesn't happen in the UK anymore, or not to my knowledge anyway, but there seems to be this fad of people going to elephant attractions. Now, there are some really good ethical animal sanctuaries out there, but sometimes you might be misled and so on. Have you had any interaction with elephants?
Yeah, so I actually rode an elephant in Pai, and this is actually just down the road from Chiang Mai, so I would say the majority of my animal interactions did actually occur when I was in Southeast Asia. This was actually something I was really set on doing the whole time I was out there. I was out there for 5 months and I was like, I want to ride an elephant, because how many people out there can say they don't love elephants? I mean, they're amazing. They're absolutely beautiful animals. They're social, they're emotional. You can connect. I remember when I first saw my first ever elephant. This is the thing, and I can't stress this enough. When you don't know, you're blinkered to it and you don't see it. But this bull elephant was tied up on the shortest chain by the side of the road. And I obviously noticed it, but I didn't see it as wrong, I guess, because it's legal. I assumed that it was okay. I didn't really know much about animal husbandry, how they should be kept, etc. I obviously went on later in life to learn all about that and back into education, which is why I am here now. But I remember seeing this elephant and I was just totally in awe of it. And I remember crying because I was so emotional that I'd seen an elephant. But again, totally selfish. It was for me. We obviously saw these elephants a lot in Thailand. You know, every town you go to, you will find elephants tied up at the side of the road waiting for people to ride them. But I think the thing that people don't understand is how those elephants get there. These elephants, obviously, they are bred in captivity now to be rode by humans. But originally, these elephants were taken from the wild, where they were perfectly fine, you know, doing their thing. And we take them, and we actually do something called breaking their spirits, where we abuse them. We hit them with sticks. We just break them down until their spirits are broken. They have no will to fight anymore. And that's the point where you can have people ride on their backs, because they're not wild anymore. They've been, I guess, tamed, in quotation marks, because it's a horrible, horrible thing for them to go through. There's absolutely no necessity to this either. It's another selfish need for humans to be close to animals, when actually, why not take the extra little bit of effort and try and see them in the wild? It will be more difficult, but say, maybe you'd have more luck going to Africa on a safari and seeing an African elephant, because Asian elephants are quite forest-dwelling animals, aren't they? So you would be more lucky to go to Africa and see them. But why not just take that little bit of responsibility and stand and watch from afar, rather than have to touch it, have to put it through this horrible situation, just so that you can ride it for half an hour? Because that elephant lives by the side of the road every day in the heat, being given the odd banana. But ultimately, you can't say the welfare for these animals is good.
I think the key thing is, as well, there are some responsible sanctuaries out there, but there's absolutely no excuse not to do your own research before you go to these places. So do have a look on the internet, see what people are saying, but make sure you look around. Don't just look on the organisation's website. But there's a few key tips. Elephants in ethical sanctuaries should never be ridden. So if they're offering rides and so on, you've got to question how ethical it is. Keep an eye out for unnatural behaviours. So anything like head weaving and so on, again, in good ethical sanctuaries, these behaviours are going to be reduced. Ethical sanctuaries will never make their elephants do tricks, neither. Also, if there's babies there, good sanctuaries generally do not breed their animals. So that could be an obvious sign that this is not an ethical sanctuary. The other thing is, as well, bullocks should only be used in an emergency. So if they're routinely used by the handlers or trainers, then you know there might be something wrong with these. I think some things I've seen as well as a tourist, I was quite a avid zoo goer. Now, whether you're for zoos or against zoos, the UK is generally accepted as some of the best welfare standards in the world. But sometimes when we go abroad, we sort of forget about what we're used to at home, and there's often lots of zoos which are quite poor in terms of welfare and their conservation message. And I've been to a few of them. I was naive again. You see the tourist signs, we have crocodiles or whatever, and you don't really think much beyond that, because you sort of think, oh, it's going to be the same as the UK, where they're generally well looked after. So just keep an eye out for stuff like that as well. Do your research is key, I think.
Yeah, I went to a zoo in Cambodia, and it was honestly one of the most depressing places I've ever been to, because again, tiny, tiny cages, no enrichment. There was a pair of gibbons. I don't know, they might have been white-handed gibbons. Two of them in a cage, so small that all they could do, I think it was probably 1 by 2 meters, and they were just swinging back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Obviously a stereotypical behavior. They were just trying to cope with the fact that they couldn't move. They were just totally trapped. I remember seeing a leopard. She was such a lovely leopard as well, but she was in the smallest, most barren, concrete paved cage I've ever seen. And I mean, obviously I wouldn't have learnt about it until I'd gone in there, but I just wouldn't pay for it again. I wouldn't pay for any of these attractions ever again, because I can't see how it's appealing. So going back to dolphinariums, for example, there's so much footage, photographs, science out there that is, you know, the documentary Blackfish, for example. There's so much of it out there now telling us that this is wrong, or The Cove. You cannot watch The Cove and see these dolphins being they're being ushered in from the wild, scared out of their wits, and forced into nets where people either kill them for meat, or they drag them out of the ocean and send them off to, you know, some other place to spend their life in a swimming pool doing tricks for humans. It's just beyond me at this point.
Some people might argue that some of these documentaries are emotive, but please just do your independent research, because when you start to look into it yourself with a clear mind, you'll actually see a lot of these messages, what you're listening to in such documentaries, are right. I think sometimes animal attractions, they're quite easy because, you know, you either want to go to them or don't want to go to them, and you can make that ethical decision. And there's also lots of information out there. But some other things, and I've sort of been duped and been guilty of it too, is when we're on holiday, we just assume everything's okay. So when we go to a restaurant, for example, if there's swordfish and shark and so on, we just think, oh, this has been caught in a sustainable way by a local fishing town in a local fishing village, and it's been served to us. Now, I don't eat fish anymore, but I've been guilty of eating shark, marlin, swordfish, all fish which can be marketed as a sustainable fish. But when you start to look into it, there's lots of illegal drift nets which are catching whales and cetaceans and so on. We've just got back from Norway, and we were walking through a local park, local market, and there was whale on the menu, which, you know, once you got talking to people, it was generally there for the tourist market. So you can be driving things like this just by not being responsible when we go abroad. Other foods and stuff you might want to look out for is Steve Backshaw's just been raising awareness about civet poo coffee. Now, it sounds fun, it sounds cool, and there are some wild varieties where there's not much interfering with the civet, but because of the tourist trade and the popularity increasing, these are often kept in really small cages now and sort of exploited. But what about souvenirs, Laura?
Yeah, this is something also, I remember being very young and seeing dried seahorses and starfishes everywhere. And even like...
Including the UK, lots of dried starfish and stuff.
I know people who had dried starfish decorating their bath. But... And also just shells of things. I mean, the quantity of shells that you see on sale when you're on holiday or on seaside resorts, they cannot have all been taken from the beach, you know, especially when their colour's been preserved. They've been taken alive and de-shelled for us to buy in souvenir shops. But we were recently in Greece, weren't we? And we walked past a shop and I was shocked. I couldn't believe this. It was a small shop, but it was literally everything that they were selling was a part of a dead animal. So there were dried blowerfish hanging outside, like sharks, pinatas. Yeah,
sharks as well.
There was, what's the name of that shark? And it's got a really, it's quite a flat shark. It's a bottom feeder and it's got a pointed face like a ray. Well, they've actually recently been class is actually endangered now. I think they're definitely a threatened species. And there was just one of them stuffed as come and buy this. This is exciting. You can buy one of these dead sharks and have it on your living room table.
And the other one, what got me as well, just going, it's something you probably don't think of. And don't get me wrong, there probably are sustainable fisheries doing it. But just the sheer amount we saw was sponges.
Mm-hmm.
People often forget that these are animals and some of them can live thousands and thousands of years, and just to see them stuffed in a bag. And when we went snorkeling, we saw a few sponges, but
it was barren.
It was quite barren because a lot of them had been harvested for tourists.
Yeah. And this is the thing, it really upsets me to think that a sponge, for example, it's a simple organism and it takes so long for it to grow, and it does live for such a long time. I mean, how long was it?
Some sponges live over 10,000 years.
10,000 years. So it's managed to survive this earth for 10,000 years, and then we just scoop it up, dry it out, and decide to rub it all over our bodies with a bit of soap.
It's something, when you're doing your weekly shopping in the UK, you'd probably not think, oh, I need a sponge. But when you see it in a souvenir shop,
natural. Ooh, local. Cultural. All of these kind of attitudes. I remember a few years ago, a friend of mine and I went to Iceland, and we obviously went for all the whale watching because, you know, we're whale enthusiasts and I study cetaceans, and we wanted to see killer whales and sperm whales and humpbacks in a beautiful setting.
And again, just even with stuff like that, do your research, make sure it's a responsible tour or what follows whale watching codes.
I'd just like to insert here a little bit about responsible whale watching. Your boat should never intentionally approach a cetacean. That is going to disturb the cetacean. It's going to stress it. The point is, you go to an area where you're likely to see them. And if you see them, you stop, you turn your engine off, and you let them come to you, or you watch from a distance. Take binoculars, take your long zooms, and just watch them from afar. You'll get much better behaviours out of them if you let them be. But if you chase them. I actually was on a whale watching tour in Ecuador, and they were harassing them. They just kept going and going, chasing these poor humpbacks, and it was stressing me out because I did know better by then. It was the first whale watching tour I'd ever been on, and I kept thinking, every time you try to chase this animal, it's just going to get further and further away. So why not just stop and watch it? So that's just a little thing to remember, especially in the UK, because it is illegal to disturb cetaceans, whether that be intentionally pursuing them on a boat, by swimming with them, trying to intentionally hurt them. I've recently seen footage of some people in, was it Cornwall, throwing stones at a basking shark, which is also protected by UK law. Just please be responsible and just enjoy them from a distance. You don't need to be touching them. You don't need to be close to them. You don't need to swim with them. You're going to see their amazing repertoire of behaviours and see them in their natural environment much better if you just leave them alone. But what I was going to talk about was me and my friend Carl, we both love animals, both love wildlife, and we saw on like a list of tourist attractions in Iceland that there was this shark museum. And in our heads, we're like, cool, a museum all about sharks. Let's go and like learn about sharks. Were we wrong? We got there and it turns out that this was a museum to the butchering and eating of sharks. Apparently this is a tradition in Iceland where they take Greenland sharks. Apparently they don't take them anymore. They just take bycatch. But I don't know if I believe that. And they take these Greenland sharks, which also are another species that live for hundreds of years if left be. And they just hang them up and dry them and salt them. And apparently you can only have like less than a sugar cube's worth at a time because it's so high in toxins, it might kill you. So again, I honestly don't see the appeal. But again, this museum, it didn't really have any education about actual sharks or shark conservation, shark behaviour. It was just about how fishermen would drag them out of the sea, kill them and eat them, which I find very upsetting, very sad and such a waste.
I think as well with souvenirs and so on, just be really careful as well, because you could spend a lot of money and actually not get these things through customs as well, because they might be on CITES, they might be protected, they might be illegal to import into some countries. And one thing as well, which can be quite difficult to do, you might be in a situation in local markets where you see live animals kept in really poor conditions, and sometimes there might be that temptation to buy them and free them, but that's something we really shouldn't do.
We're funding the problem. If you're giving these people money, that's telling them that they need to buy more because people want it. So if you're, for example, in Asia, you'll often see people on the side of the road with tiny little bamboo cages with birds in near temples, and they'll offer to sell you these little birds in cages so you can set them free at the top of the temple. It's like a bit, it's supposed to be a religious thing. I don't see how it's Buddhist in any way. You're actually, you know, you set that bird free, but they're just going to go and, you know, find some more and put them back in those cages. So don't spend money on these things. For example, I saw in Spain a guy with a squirrel monkey on his shoulder trying to get people to take photos of the squirrel monkey. Yeah. A, squirrel monkeys aren't from Spain, they're from the Amazon. And B, it shouldn't be in a busy touristy street with cars and noise and drunken people walking up and down the road. Three, where is this monkey staying? When it's not on the street with its owner, where is the monkey staying? How do you know that it's in a decent environment, it's getting fed the right things, it's getting treated with the, you know, respect it deserved? Because this is something I think is quite forgotten about. You see the animal where it is in that moment, but are we thinking about where it goes at the end of the day? Where is it sleeping? What is it eating? How is it actually being cared for outside of that?
And we see that in the UK as well with snakes and such like. So again, are they kept right? You know, some of these people might require licenses. Do they have them? Can they talk to you about the animal, yeah, or is it just being exploited?
Also, I feel like this maybe not. Well, I suppose it can come under the title of responsible tourism, but gimmicky animals. I mean, raccoon dogs, meerkats, porcupines. These animals, you know, they're wild. They're not domesticated. There's a difference between wild, tame, and domesticated. A tame animal can be wild, but it's been, I guess, trained to be less wild.
As well,
yeah, habituated, used to humans, but it doesn't mean it's domesticated. Domestication takes hundreds, if not thousands, of years. So when we talk about domesticated animals, we're talking, you know, pigs, dogs, cats, cows. When we're talking tame animals, we're talking about animals in captivity, which were originally wild or were brought up in captivity from being wild.
But still, so wild species.
Still wild species at heart. Most, you know, best off in the wild. And we know that, you know, the RSPCA have called out about this. They've said, you know, bearded dragons, meerkats, raccoon dogs, marmosets, it's not a good idea to keep them. I mean, in the UK, you don't need a license to keep a marmoset in a birdcage.
I think one thing I want to raise awareness to quickly as we come to an end, I mean, the key thing is just keep doing your research everything you're doing, have a look into things, be a responsible tourist. Tour operators are getting on board now, reviewing certain attractions they sell. TripAdvisor's no longer reviewing certain attractions. So do have a look around, shop around and ask questions. But one thing which is quite worrying to me is I absolutely love travelling, but I'm aware, obviously, with the climate crisis and going abroad, you can give yourself a massive footprint. So ideally, try and travel less and try and travel as sustainable as possible. But sometimes when there's no alternative or little alternative, there are lots of ways now, and we've just done it for our holiday to Greece, where you can actually carbon offset your travels.
Yeah.
So do have a look into doing that. It's a bit less guilt-free. Obviously, the carbon's still being used, but you can offset it. And there might be loads of companies around, and we're no way endorsing this one, but we use My Climate, where you could pay the amount of money to offset your carbon, but also it goes to projects, live projects, helping farmers farm sustainably, planting trees, animal conservation and so forth. So it's quite a cool way where it's a bit less guilt-free, you can offset the carbon, but also you can really make a difference to local communities, perhaps in the countries you visited as well.
So I guess the kind of finishing thing we would like to stress is just really be responsible. Take the responsibility yourself to research, to, you know, listen to other people's stories and experiences, and to, you know, look online, read newspaper articles, whatever you need to do before you go to that place, just make sure that you're informed and that you're comfortable with the realities of that place.
Just a side note as well, remember these attractions, they're salespeople. So make sure your research is independent. Some people will be anti-captivity, some people will be for captivity, but really it's up to you to look into it, look at both sides of the argument, come up with an independent view which meets your own morals but also puts the animals first.
Exactly. So I think there we're going to wrap it up. If you want to get involved, then please join the conversation by leaving us a comment and by using our hashtags conservationis and conservationchatuk. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. We've also got a website called www.conservationchatuk.com. Thank you very much for listening and speak to you all next time.